What's the deal? It's your boy Chris Childs, aka Young Light Skinned Hokage, business mogul, entrepreneur, artist / shoe customizer. You can find me at _ Chris Childs on social media or www.shopchrischilds.com. And you tuned into the candy shop. Ya dig.
What's up, everybody? It's Gina Payne from Let's Talk About It, the show where no subject is off limits. You can catch us everywhere, Fridays, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor. And we're coming to YouTube real soon. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Let's with two S's Talk About It _. So without further ado, you are now listening to Candyman TV. Let's get into the show.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy Candyman. Y'all listen to the Candy Shopper in 54 countries. Today we have a very special guest today from St. Louis, Missouri, the owner and financial coach at JT Thomas Solutions, Jonathan Thomas. He helps people eliminate debt and save money. Currently residing in Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing today?
Oh, it's great to be here, my friend.
It's great to be here. Man, we had a recording earlier. We was 3 minutes in, and I tried to put my iPad on airplane mode so nobody could FaceTime me, and it took the internet off. So we're back at it again, but this time I sound a little bit better on the intro.
No, don't worry, not at all.
So I know we were talking about your business, but I kind of want to take it a little bit further back before we get into that, like some of your humble beginnings. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how you grew up in St. Louis.
So I think I wouldn't have grown up too many different, even though I was definitely blessed. My mom was able to send me to the same school from K through 12. I went to school, born and raised, private school, went off to college, graduated from Harris Stowe down there. So shout out to the Hornets, shout out to Webster University, got my master's. And I did all those things, and yet by the time I was 23, 24, I was in an apartment. I hadn't landed into my career, and I was unemployed. And so it's August, September of 2012, and I'm sitting there looking, well, what am I going to do about these bills? Because I had my apartment, and I was actually a roommate, and I didn't want to fail my roommate. So my girlfriend at the time kind of showed me or introduced me to banking. I was able to get a job at Bank of America. And one of the things that I told myself when I came into this job was, hey, I want to make sure that next time if I'm unemployed or something bad happens, I don't want money to be a problem for myself. I don't want the lack of money, honestly, to be a problem. I don't want that to be something I have to think about. So with having a 500 credit score, no savings, going into the bank, I felt, hey, there's no better place to learn than an actual financial institution. So I spent the first 30, 60, 90 days really covering all aspects of the bank and really immersing myself into trying to figure out how do people have money? How do people get to the point where they're investing? How do people buy cars? And how do people just manage their day-to-day expenses, have these credit cards? What are people actually doing? And so I was able to kind of figure that out. What are the pitfalls that people get into? How do people stop overdrafting? All those different things, because I was doing all of it. And so it wasn't until I got to the bank that I really understood the value of savings, the value of making the right decision every time, as much as you can, because you're still going to make wrong decisions. And on the big things, make good decisions. And then that way, when the small things hit you, it won't be that big a deal. So I spent my time growing that knowledge base, growing in my career, growing in leadership. So I worked at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Credit Union, even got licensed to do mortgages. So I understand that a whole lot better as far as that home buying process and the pitfalls and the challenges that people have, all to kind of support my peers and just anyone who will listen that's trying to better themselves, make better decisions with the outcome to get them financially wherever they're trying to go. Because the truth is, we all I might be trying to go for a $5 million net worth, but somebody else will be perfectly happy living their best life at $500,000 or just a couple hundred thousand. Everybody's different. But the point is, I just don't want whatever you got going on, money to be your sticking point that's standing in your way.
Oh yeah, for sure, because it is rough out here, especially like during the pandemic and whatnot, and it seemed like a lot of people really didn't know where to go. Did what kind of impact did the pandemic have on you when it first started?
Well, truth be told, it was, I had actually had just left the credit union in 2019, so it was, I wasn't working because I thought I was going to move back to St. Louis, and I wasn't working at all, but incidentally, I made more money sitting in that first 7 months before I started going back to the workforce, and I didn't even touch my savings. And so for me, it just validated all the things that I've been doing, saving, trying to make good decisions, keeping my my expenses to a minimum, finding new innovative ways to make income, and really following through and being as consistent as you possibly can. And so for me, I was able to really take the biz, really embark and take the business to another level. So I wasn't on YouTube or Facebook. I was in Facebook, but I wasn't in too much. But that's when I started embarking on YouTube and TikTok and really understanding the power of video media and learning how to do video media and recording videos and now coming to wonderful podcasts like yourself. To really understand how to educate people the way they want to receive it. And so for us, yeah, I was not working that first, first 7 months of that year. And here I am now, not just with a newly fresh built home, but now have a rental property. So it's one of those things of however you prepare yourself, when the opportunity comes, and for some people, like you said, this may be a hard time, but for a lot of people, this is going to be opportunity. You just don't know what the opportunity is going to look like. So in 2008, the opportunity was real estate. And some of this opportunity in this time is media. A lot of people are looking for information. They're looking for answers. So they're coming up to your podcast. They're coming up to financial podcasts. They're getting connected with other businesses. And for businesses, and even just regular people, this is the opportunity that shows you how strong is your business. Can you withstand a downturn, which is what we're in now, and not know how long that downturn is going to last? How are you going to adapt your business to your environment? So all those things for me have been more of a teaching mechanism and blessing, but it's really solidified that if you set the proper foundation, when these opportunities come, because it's not an if, it's always going to happen. You just don't know when. But when it comes, you can actually build momentum for yourself rather than fight for survival.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That is for sure. So with the real estate, because I just want the guest before my recent guest, she is actually a multi-million dollar portfolio in real estate. Well, she has a multi-million dollar portfolio in real estate. And she was talking basically the same thing, like how real estate is really like, especially nowadays, real estate is such a humongous thing. Like my uncle's been doing real estate and he said like the market is going crazy. So let's get to your business. So just say if somebody wanted to start getting into real estate, what kind of services would your business offer for them?
Well, I mean, I'm going to show you all the different ways that you can get in real estate. Because the thing about it is, I get it. You see somebody, hey, this person owns 4 properties. This other person does mobile home. This other person does wholesaling. There's so many different ways you can do real estate rather than just go out and get a property and put a renter in it. There's a lot of different ways. And so it's one of those things that just like stock market investing, I want you to, number one, know all the different options, because with each option, there's, I mean, you're a business owner, so you understand there's a risk to it. And so if you understand, oh, this could happen in this scenario, I'm not comfortable with that. That's why you don't do that type of business. You do the type of risk that you're comfortable with. Stock market, day trade. I can do a little bit. I'll buy stocks, but I'll never fully be a day trader. Number one, because of the time commitment. And number two, it seems for me, I do better from a strength aspect, focusing on how I can generate income. And it's easier for me to put money into a ready-made system of investing that I know is going to work, that's going to return me, rather than me spend my time trying to, oh, I got to watch this stock, and now I got to move this money and sell and all that. So I won't ever be that type of person. But I do know all the different ways you can invest in the stock market. And I do know at which level you need to be. So with real estate investing, you need to understand that, okay, if you can buy a car that goes down in value and you're willing to pay $500-$600 on a car, you should be willing to invest in real estate. Because you don't have to start your real estate portfolio with a $200,000-$300,000 property. To learn, you can start, there are many places you can start with $50,000-$70,000 property, which would probably be $6,000-$7,000 initial investment down payment for you. So that's where I would start, letting you know what are all your options, what are the risks involved with the options. Then once you can figure out, okay, these are my options, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I'm not comfortable with, then you start to think about, okay, how do I build this business strategically? So if it is, just for instance, you're doing something with a renter, you need to account for the fact that, okay, if I'm going to spend $10,000 in a down payment, I also need to have, just in case, a $10,000 emergency fund for when something happens with the property. Even if it's a new property, something's still going to happen. So it's better that you have money already prepared for that, and then that way it sets you up for a stronger foundation to begin to think about, okay, how do I scale or how do I go up to the next property?
Okay. So how long have you been in the game for real estate?
For real estate, so again, I started with my license two years ago. But I've always, in my career, I've had the privilege of being exposed to the bank side of things. So I've seen the foreclosures, but more importantly, I've seen the people who own real estate. And when I say seen them, I mean I've looked in depth at their tax returns of how they're doing the real estate. Because at the end of the day, it's all about how the money works, right? So how are they getting their properties? I've seen people go out and flip. But more commonly, I saw the people that had sustainable, they were living in the property, then turn it into a rental. And then they'll move on, they'll keep it as a property. Times like these would happen, and now their values then shot up. And so when their values shot up $700,000-$800,000 over a 6-7-8 period, they would liquidate, pay off some of their properties, open up some more cash flow, and then go buy a new one.
Yeah, that's nuts. And especially you working at a bank, I could only imagine some of the big bills you've seen when people do real estate.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you're looking for, because you're not trying to look at the surface of, oh, somebody got a rental property. They're looking at the tax benefits. They're looking at how much money can they generate off the property, and then why was it successful? So I've seen clients who they had properties, but they were in college towns. I'm like, I wouldn't normally look to buy that, but they got college kids renting rooms $600-$800 a month per room. They're generating a lot of cash flow because they didn't pay much for the property. So those are situations that, like I said, it's just one, you know, saying one way of doing it, but you don't, everything doesn't have to be a fix and flip scenario. Everything doesn't have to be, hey, I'm just trying to make some quick cash, because what you're trying to figure out is you're trying to actually learn the skill. And it's easier to learn the skill when you're not invested as deeply. So a $50,000, $60,000 property, yeah, it may not grow much over 10 years, but what you're not getting and looking for growth, you're trying to gain the skill so you can take that skill and apply it to a $300,000, $400,000 property that will turn into a million in the next 5-6 years. That's how you should go about it.
So tell me what's one of the things that you regret about doing like the whole real estate thing? Is there anything that you did that you would turn around or do better?
So I almost said, like, before I left St. Louis to move to Charlotte, I moved because I was going to be with my girlfriend that I spoke of earlier that introduced me to banking, and she's now a wife. But before I moved, I had saved up money, and I was actually going to buy a property in St. Louis because that was just going to be my next step to because I had already been exposed and I kind of figured out what was going on. But when I came to the decision, it was either move, be with the wife, invest in the wife, or buy the property. And so what I figured out was it seemed like a bad decision, or it seemed, for me, I couldn't grapple with the fact of, did I make the right decision? Did I make the wrong decision? Obviously, for me, I made the right decision, but from a numbers standpoint, I thought I made the wrong decision. The reason why I said that is because I'm like, oh, I would still have that property. The rent, obviously, by now, the thing would be worth $200,000-$300,000 more than what I paid for it, all those type of things. But what I didn't factor in is, what type of life was I trying to live? And that was the thing that really caused me to pause, and everything that I was going on in banking, all the people, even millionaires that I'm sitting down with, they were all 65, 70, and then they hit their retirement. They did 30 years. And then I say, well, what are you going to do now? They were like, well, now I start traveling. Now I start enjoying my life. I was like, so you didn't enjoy the last 30? Well, I worked, but we lived very frugally, all that type of stuff. So I realized life is really, for me, is really too precious. Time is a really, really finite resource. And I don't want to get to 65. And yeah, I got all this money. I did all this wealth stuff. But then I'm like, I didn't really enjoy the money. Like, I, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want to. And trust me, when you travel at 65, 70, that's not the same as when you're 30 or when you're 20.
Yeah.
Like, your body is not the same. So that's one of the things that I realized, that I've been in Charlotte 7 years. Charlotte, incidentally, is number 5 on the list of Black millionaires for helping people become most popular cities that have Black millionaires. So that means the environment is there to help you build wealth if you're African American. I didn't know that when I moved in. It was just a natural cause. But I will say, after I moved to Charlotte, July 2015, April, so that's 9 months after I moved to Charlotte, I tripled my income. After that, my income just kept growing, but the opportunities for us to build and grow wealth were a lot more abundant here. And I still was traveling. I've still been with my wife, all those different type of things. So I didn't lack a gain. So overall, if you ask me now, I didn't make a misstep on that particular decision. The only thing I would tell people is I didn't save and invest early enough. Because the easier you do it, it's a smaller price to pay. Or the earlier you do it, it's a smaller price to pay. So that's what I would really say. I thought the rental property would have been the thing, but it was really, if I would have just been, as much money as I'd have made over my time, been putting at least $200-$300 a month in a Roth or a brokerage or something in an index fund, I would now have, just on that one account, probably just under a million from 200. So you might have invested maybe $100,000 mathematically.
Okay. So let's get into, cause I see, you and your wife. So you and your wife must have a really, really good close connection.
I would say our values are strong aligned. So where I'm high level, I'm good at money, but my wife is good at the project management, execution, operation, detail. So she's going to make sure that all the paperwork is in order. So I guess you could say, well, I know you could say, like, she's actually better at real estate than me. Like, she just has an eye for where to buy area, what's going on. Because even this home we're in now, we started building in November. When we closed, the house it appraised over value like $30,000-$40,000, but now it's about $100,000 in equity, and we only been in the thing 3 months.
Ooh wee.
So she knows her stuff. The property she bought that we rent, we stayed in there, but she got in, and just like we did with this home, got in early. Meaning she was one of the first few homes in the complex. That home is now, it's more than doubled in value. Okay. So that's where she's good. Like, I'm good at the stocks, investing, and all that type of stuff. She's good at real estate. When it came to the rental property, I'm good at the business. I'm good at evaluating what's a good renter, what things should we look at, because obviously banking, I've done underwriting. I know how to look at somebody's credit report and get extra information that most people wouldn't get. But she's good at, hey, we need to have a lease. This is what needs to be in the lease. These are the laws of the county, all that type of stuff. And then I'm good at the taxes piece.
Okay. So equal partnership. So was she doing the real estate before you, or how did that situation get abroad?
No, like she had just kind of been investing. Now she'd been investing for a long time as far as in the stock market, but it was really just her father really impressing upon her the importance of really utilizing home ownership, real estate market, because he doesn't have a lot of property, but he understands the value of land, property, all that type of stuff. And so that's really what turned her attention to, hey, I need to be a little bit more fruitful, quit wasting my money on this rent, and look for a property. And when we got together, as far as started looking at marriage, we knew we weren't going to stay there forever, but the idea, she bought that house with the idea of, hey, this is going to one day be a rental property. And the fact is, a lot of people, even the house we're in now, it's a great place, but we're looking at it more like, because it's, you may be surprised by how many people are in these $500,000-$600,000 neighborhoods, but they're renting. And so that's the thing we look at with these properties, because we understand, okay, yeah, I'm looking at buying a property that I didn't live in now, but the first one was one that we lived in. We understand the property because it was your first time going into the waters. You want to be comfortable with it. You want to understand the nuance of the home and all that type of stuff. So that was her introduction. Her father kind of turned her attention. And then as we started learning, reading, getting involved with people who have done it, that's where we started to really turn the jets on. And then once you get that first one under it, and it's been good and consistent, and problems, little problems here and there have arisen, that starts to build your confidence of, okay, now I can start preparing for that next one.
Okay. So as we talked about the real estate, let's get into the stocks and other investing that you have taken interest into as well. So now when it comes to the stocks and everything, did you get involved with stocks and investing after the real estate, or was that a little bit before?
That was the first. My introduction to stocks was what's going to be tried and true. So just like with your finances, what's going to be the best way to set yourself up for success? So when you're talking about, hey, I just want to be prepared for life, the best way to set yourself up for success is if you have $10,000, $20,000. If you're single, if you have about $15,000, if you're married, you have about $20,000, $25,000, you will be fine if life should come. Anything that pops up, you will be fine. The same thing is true of investing. if you lay your beginning investments with, hey, this is what's tried and true, like you don't deviate, you know what's going to be long-term successful, it will set you up a lot easier to do the more riskier things, which means it's not as tried and true, or it could fluctuate. So a good example for me is I was heavy. I'm still heavy in index funds, invested in the total stock market. This year, obviously, we're in a bear market. It's down 20%. But last year, made 30%. The year before that, made about 25%. I didn't trade. I just kept buying. But that's what the stock market will do. Historically, investing in the S&P 500, total stock market, over a 50-year span of time, you will get probably, or what it's done is about 11%. The thing about the stock market is you got to understand, 3 years, you're likely to have a 66% chance of getting a return. If you hold something for 3 years, no matter what you're holding, 66% chance that you're going to get a return. If you hold it for 5 years, it goes up to 90 to 95%. So the longer you hold your stocks, the longer you hold your investments is going to return you that compound interest, that dividend, all that stuff, because that's just how the stock market, the U.S. economy, if as we're seeing it right now, it continually grows up. And what I mean by grows up, the simplest way I could tell you is, you said you was in ninth grade about, 2015, 2013, something like that?
Yep.
Yeah, so how much was a McDonald's cheeseburger back then?
Shoot. That was when the dollar menu was full effect.
Right. You know what I mean? Now, if you want to buy a cheeseburger, you're definitely going to spend about $1.20. If you want a McDouble, which used to be a dollar, it's about $1.89.
Yep.
The point is, the business has grown up. And McDonald's has always been around. Facebook, even though they're having some volatility, they'll be around because they introduced Google. Has definitely been around. Like, all these companies, they do continue to grow. That's the backbone of America. We're going to continue to grow up. So when you understand that, you're like, oh, hey, I'm investing in America, because I think no matter what happens, we're always going to go up. Even if we dip down with COVID, your money dipped down in March, but it recovered 30-some percent 3 months later. So the whole point is saying with stock market investing, you lay your foundation with the tried and true. The tried and true, how most people in books become millionaires, statistical fact, been interviewed, their paperwork has been looked. They invested in tried and true investments. Their investment strategy wasn't, I guess you could say, ultra sexy or anything. They were just investing in things like mutual funds, things like index funds that have low fee in the United States, S&P 500, total stock market index fund, those type of things. And they just kept doing that month over month over month. And after you do that for a 30-year period of time, 20-year period of time, you'll amass $2, $3 million.
Yeah, because I've heard a lot lately is about index funds, and I know some other people have heard about it too, like who are just like really starting on it.
Right.
And, you know, it's definitely a lot of information to learn, but once you learn it and are consistent with it, the benefits are really the best. You know, a lot of people, especially like my age and generation and below, a lot of people just they want it now, but they don't want to be. They don't want that waiting process. They don't want to wait for the money to grow. You know, they don't want to wait for the results. They want it instantly. Like if I invest $100 today, they want to be millionaires by the next 5 minutes. But it don't even work like that.
So, and that's the thing that people don't understand in the wealth game: patience. Whether you're doing real estate investing or whether you're doing Did he hang up on me?
No, I'm sure.
Whether you're doing real estate investing or whether you're doing stock market, the patience, the ability to delay gratification for a little while, because if you're just starting, it's going to probably take you a more investment. But it's really, delay gratification is really kind of saying no now so you can have a yes later type thing. But for me, what I've seen is the patience. You have to have the patience, because once you do start rolling, and just like in business, you put your podcast out, you go hard every day, and then there's this one magical day where all the things you've learned, you've been consistent, you put out great consistent quality episode, and now people are sharing your stuff faster at a faster rate than you can produce it. And now, when it's going that fast, now you got an inbox full of people reaching out. You got an inbox full of sponsors trying to catch up to you. And now you got a whole new thing about your business growing faster than you can control it. But that's the same thing with real estate investing. You've been stocking away money. You've been trying to learn as much as you can learn. And then there's a point where you do it. But then once you do one and you do it correctly, meaning you're making cash flow off the deal and your property is going in value, it's going to take you less time to get the second one because you have more money in the picture.
Yeah, for sure.
But it takes patience to get to that point.
Yes, sir. So what are some of the, just say if someone's, just say for instance, somebody's listening to this podcast episode and they say, okay, I want to get involved in investing. I want to get involved in real estate. I want to get involved with just the whole, basically everything that you do, getting their credit right, everything. What would you tell them like to look out for, like before they get started? Like, what would you have some advice on? Like, before you get started, you got to be prepared for this. You got to be prepared for that. What are a couple of things that you would tell them?
Well, like you're in right now, the market will go down, but it'll go up. So I read the market, but I don't necessarily hawk the market. Like, you don't have to go look at your stock accounts to know that, hey, the stock market is down. There's enough media and information around there to tell you, hey, the economy, the high inflation, all those different things. What the first thing you need to do personally is, do I have enough cash to support me should I lose my main source of income? And what I mean is, when I start off with emergency fund, I had 10 grand and that was supposed to last me about 6 months. What happened was I got better at my bills, better at lowering my expenses, and the same 10 grand could last me to 12 months. Now I've grown that emergency fund because I have a family, wife, and a daughter. But if you have about 20 grand, the average person, that's probably about 18 months that you could be without a job. Why would you want to be without a job for 18 months? Well, the fact is, if you get laid off, and that's what's happening around this time, the more time you have, the higher the chance you will come back to the workforce. You will come back at a higher rate. But if you don't have much time, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and take the first thing, and likely you're going to take a pay cut because you have to pay your bills.
Right.
So you first thing you do before you invest, that's number one reason. Before you invest, you have 10, if you're single, 10 to 15. If you got a kid, about 20. If you're married, about 25. $1,000 sitting in cash. The first reason why you're doing that is to help protect your income. The second reason why you're doing that is to help protect your investments. So when you invest in the stock market, invest in real estate, there's going to be a time where there's a downtime for something. And the thing about investing is, in every book, if you go read, anybody who's been the go-to person on millionaires, index funds, or whatever, the biggest mistake that I saw consistent, I've read a lot of these books, but the most common mistake that these people said was, I pulled, my biggest mistake was I pulled out of the stock market when it was down. And the reason why is because you will lose an extreme amount of money. As you're adding more money in, that means you're buying at a discount. And so you're gaining. So if, let's just say, for example, actually, this is a good example. Amazon is $116 right now. But let's just say its normal price is $100.
Right.
The stock market right now is in what's called a bear market. A bear market means the stock market has decreased in price by 20%. So if the stock market decreased by 20%, that would say that $100 Amazon is really selling at $80, right?
Right.
So just by buying that, when the stock market comes back up, you made $20 on the buy. Because it's just down right now because of the market, a lot of things are changing. But do you really think Amazon is about to fold?
Not at all.
So essentially, if that price, you bought something that's worth 100 at 80.
See?
And then it's going to grow up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So that's why you don't want to pull out now, because even if you bought at a higher, you're selling your shares at a cheaper rate. So that's why people say, hey, the worst thing I could have done was pull out when the stock market was down. And they didn't pull out because they had to. They pulled out because they were looking at their account and they couldn't stomach what the loss was. So if you pull up your account and you're like, okay, I got $1 million in here, but the stock market is down 20%, that means I got 800,000 showing.
But it's always going to go back up, though.
It's going to go back up because that's what it's done. That's what it's going to continue to do. So it's really more about the whole emergency fund is so that should you get in a bind, you don't have to unplug your investments. You can ride the wave out because it's not like, oh man, I lost my job. Well, you not only, if I lost my job and then I had to start living off my investments, pulling and pulling and pulling, I really took a loss.
Oh yeah.
And you can't get that back. You can't get that time invested in the stock market back. You're only going to be 21, 25, whatever, once.
Right, right.
So that's what you're doing. That's why I say, that's why everyone, no matter what, you can listen to people. You can say, hear those things. Because I hear it from time to time, cash is trash. I'm like, is it? Because in this time, everybody, even the big businesses, banks and all that, they want more cash on hand for themselves. So if cash was bad, then it's bad all the time. So that's why you do, I mean, number one, those two things is you secure your personal life by, okay, 20,000, 15,000, 20,000 saving cash. That's going to protect my investments, but that's also going to help me level up my income in a downturn. The second thing is you set the foundation with invested. And I will say, as somebody who does both, invest in stock market index funds as the foundation to your investing for everything. And the reason why I say that is because you don't need a lot of money to invest in the stock market. You can invest a dollar, you can invest some change. The whole point is, like, there was a time when I first got started that I put, I think, $25.89 in, but I was steady buying. Whatever I could put in, I put in. And you can't buy no property for $25.89.
Sure can't.
You can't buy no business. You can buy a product from a business for $25, but you can't buy a business for that. But here you are able to own legitimate companies in a wrapped up portfolio that if it's doing bad, hey, they're going to shift. They're going to knock the bad ones out and put some good ones in, all that type of stuff. It's self-cleansing, but you can buy and own and invest, and that money will go up with as little as a dollar or some change. So start there. Because for me, there are some people who are, hey, theoretical. I'm more reality. The reason why I like stock market investing is because at the end of the day, if I see $800,000, I know I have $800,000. If you have a property that's worth $800,000, well, it's only worth that if somebody comes and signs a check to you. And you have to go through a process to get that money. But with the stock market, I can get that money right away. It is still $800,000.
Okay. Yeah, y'all hear that, man. Y'all hear all these startups talking about, like, oh, you just need 500 down, you need 1,000 down, you need 2,000 down. Stock market is like, shoot, you can give me 50 cents. You can own a piece of that company. You don't even got to own a big piece. If I put in $1 for Google or something, or Amazon, I own some of that.
Well, in an index fund, yeah. If you're trying to buy a share, you actually have to pay that share price.
Oh, yeah, the whole share.
Right now, because with all the stock splits that happen, so Amazon's trading at 116. I think Google is somewhere around there, 120, something like that. Netflix did a split, so I think they're at like 70 or 80, but they're going through some financial hardship and adjustment to the market. Tesla is now, I believe, like 100, kind of affordable. You're not going to probably see the growth that you saw previously, but these are companies, especially Google, that will grow. Because Google and Amazon in particular, their last stock price before that split was $2,000, $3,000 to buy a share. But it took some time to get there. So just think about if you're buying at 100 and it grows at the same pace, even half that much, that's a 900% return. If it just gets to 1,000.
And that's crazy. That's definitely some great info. Cause I know a little bit about real estate and investing, not too much, but I done learned a lot just for us being on here. Like, that's just crazy. Especially like, that's crazy.
That's why if somebody, for me, like I said, I'm heavy in the stock market, but I'm starting to grow real estate. Real estate will churn cash for you, but and there's so many different ways you can have money in real estate or make money in real estate. But at the end of the day, with that property, if 80% of my wealth is in real estate, meaning, oh, well, these are the property values, well, it does no good for me because I can't live off that. I can only live off how much money are those properties producing per month, and I'm dependent on the renter or whoever's in it, whoever I'm renting to, however it is, to pay. The stock market, you take all that away, if you got $1 million portfolio, you can draw $40,000-$50,000 when it grows 10%, because you still got money to grow forward and you didn't even touch the principal, but yet you got $40,000 to live off of.
Interesting. So,
and they work in tandem. Mm-hmm. Having that good stock market portfolio, for me, what I've seen is it opens the door a lot faster to if you're trying to grow your real estate portfolio, because they know should something happen, well, he got the money to cover it.
Right. So how would somebody start a real estate portfolio?
Well, like I said, if you're single, I would say go ahead and take the hit. Get you, even look at duplex up to four doors. You can buy that as a what's called a primary residence. And the reason why people like that is because you get the same rate pricing. You get the same, you can put 3% down requirements to buy the property as if it was a single family home with just one door. The difference is in a fourplex, you can, or twoplex, whatever it is that you want to do, you can rent out that other side, and that can now help generate income to not only pay your mortgage, but be making you sizable profit. In addition to, especially if you're living in the thing, you get extremely good tax benefits as far as you're going to pay less. So that's if you have a good tax professional. So that's where I would start if I'm single. And I was married, so when I started, and we actually had a baby, but we kind of knew what was going on. Then the second thing I would do is I would try to grow my normal income as high as I can grow, as fast as I can grow. Because the more income you have, W-2 income, the better qualification you can get.
Right, right.
I would clean up, you know, my financial situation. Again, this is awesome. It can work for married too, but especially if you're single, just because single people have a flexibility in their lifestyle. So if you're single, no car notes, no credit cards. Do away with student loans if you can. You can do it so that the only debt you're carrying is real estate, is mortgages. And if you're capping your mortgages at, I will say, about, if you're going to do it and you're renting it out, 35% of your income, that's a good way to get started. Because once you've been renting for 2 years, you can now use that income that you've been bringing in to help you qualify for the next one.
Okay.
So that's how I would get started. If you got your emergency fund and you're investing in the stock market, because I don't want you just spending all your time just trying to buy real estate and get real estate. No, I want you to enjoy your life, but be more strategic with that income. Now, if you're married, then I'm going to say, hey, I would look at take the hit on how you live, meaning don't buy as much house if you can help it. Still get rid of all the debt and all that type of stuff, and then focus on, hey, how can I get a little bit more rental property? So in my case, like, I have friends who own about the same amount that I do in real estate. But that's just their one house. For me, I have a couple. And one of them is bringing me money. So if you can learn to cut what you're living in and look for opportunities like, hey, this would make a good rental, looking at the area, all that type of stuff, that can help you begin.
Okay. That's very great info. Real quick, before we go, I just want to cover real quick. So we got about 14 minutes. So finally, before we go, so the credit, helping people eliminate debt and building their credit. Do you have your own credit company, or is that through your business as well? The credit consultant.
So I mean, basically, it's consultation, and depending on what the scenario is. Like I said, I want information to be accessible, and there are people that will do true credit repair, and that I don't want people to think that you can't necessarily repair your credit, because you can't. I've had collections on mine, and then there was a year where I got a good tax refund, and so I paid off all my collection. Only thing is, I didn't establish any credit. And for me, it's more helping you understand who is it that you owe? How do you negotiate the price down and get it done and be done with it completely? There are some instances where you can, I'm not going to lie, because of the company, they folded. They, you know what I'm saying, you can dispute and that will go off. But we're talking about actually getting rid of it properly and truthfully. And then from a growth of credit, knowing what banks do I need to be doing business with early on. And you don't have to do a consultation with me. I will tell you one of the top people to do if you have a low credit score. That even I have my, I started my card with them. They've been very generous. I've only had one card I've had a couple, but one good credit card, and they've done really well. But Capital One is who I always tell people to recommend. It's a couple different reasons. Number one, they're gonna pre-approve you oftentimes with a low score. They work with lower score tier people. Number two, to grow your credit line with them, they don't do a credit pool, which, it's kind of a two-edged sword when you go in and you're like, oh, I want to increase my my credit line, but oh, we got to pull your credit, so I got to take a few four or five point hit to try to get a little bit more credit line increase. Number three, should you get into debt, which I don't want you using this credit card for anything that you don't have in your bank account to pay, but if you did get in debt, because I had debt with them and I had to learn the hard way and get my reps in, one thing I learned about them that's different from other companies is they have a lot of, well, every company has ways to help support you pay off the debt. Capital One, theirs was, they gave me a lot of times, I would get my interest refunded 3-4 times out the year. And we know when you're paying off credit card debt, the hardest thing to get through is that interest. So that's why I kind of stuck with them. And then, like I said, that with the credit line increases and just how long I've been with them, now I really only use the thing for traveling. But the benefits that they give me, you got your extra insurances and all that, that's great. But it's really more that extra credit line increase is what helped me speed up how fast my credit score grew to set. I think the initial growth was like 720 in 2 years. And then I had reached eight. By the time I reached 800, I wasn't even paying attention anymore.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, for sure. Y'all see, y'all here, man. Y'all getting contact. Okay. So if somebody wanted to have like a consultation or wanted to really get started and get really serious, how would they get in contact with you?
No, I appreciate it. It's Money Talks with Jonathan. The best way, I have a partner that he kind of fills all those appointments on Facebook, but you can email as well. Email, if you're on Instagram, you can instant message. If you on TikTok, you can instant message. YouTube, all those. Facebook, there's an active Facebook group, about, like I said, 1,600 members in there now. But the direct ways is Money Talks with Jonathan. There's a link on Facebook. You can contact directly. It comes straight to his inbox. And then jthomassolutions@outlook.com is the email.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'll make sure everybody, if you want to get in contact with Jonathan, all his, contact information will be in the description, in the bio. So make sure you go check him out. I'd like to say I'm glad you came on the show. I'm glad we definitely got to communicate and link up on this very special episode of the podcast. And I appreciate you. And I plan to, you know, in the future, if you'd like, you can definitely be a guest on future episodes too, for sure.
No, I appreciate it. Whatever I can do to help, my friend, let me know.
All righty. Everybody, Jonathan Thomas, the owner and financial coach at J. Thomas Solutions. Y'all hit them up and y'all have a wonderful day.
The Bear Body is Junior Payne from Let's Talk About It, the show where no subject is off limits. You can catch us everywhere Fridays on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor. And we're coming to YouTube real soon. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at Let's with two S's Talk About It _. So without further ado, you are now listening to Candyman TV. Let's get into the show.
What's the deal? It's your boy Chris Childs, aka Young Light-Skinned Hokage, business mogul, entrepreneur, artist/shoe customizer. You can find me at _ChrisChilds on social media or www.shopchrischilds.com. And you tuned into the Candy Shop. Ya dig?